Aston Martin. Performance, luxury, excellence, and James Bond. And today, Aston Martin proudly announces an entirely new model for the U.S. for 2025. The Aston Martin Disadvantage Tariff Edition. Aston Martin. Expensive.
Hello there, and welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed. I'm Gareth. He's Zog.
Hello.
Gosh, Zog, that delay every week. We're using new technology again this time to record this show, and so I'm hoping that it's all happening. There's a bizarre delay, Zog, between your video and your audio. So if I sit here looking a bit silly for a moment, it's because your face isn't moving, but your words are coming.
You're getting that weird delay thing. Yeah, I'm familiar with it. You're coming through with good sync. You know, you're no more than a frame or two out, if that. So,
That's good to know, because actually, in reality, I'm three frames out. Never mind via Riverside, your recording podcast recording thing. Hey, how are you? How are you? Are you excited for Suzuka this weekend?
I am. Yeah, it's big weekend. Suzuka's always a bunch of fun, always a race I look forward to. And there's added interest this time, you know. There's more questions to be answered this weekend.
Specifically, the is Christian Horner stupid question?
Well, I can't say I'm Christian Horner's biggest fan, but I'm not sure how much blame one can really pin on him for the, well, you know, what can we call it? Slight mess, confusion, drama at Red Bull with new boy Lawson being dropped very abruptly for Tsunoda in time to get Tsunoda in for the Japanese Grand Prix. I think if anyone, it maybe reflects worse on Helmut Marko, because I think he's rather more, you know, involved in sort of driving driver decisions than
I think you're right, yeah.
Christian Horner. And, you know, it does look pretty bad for them if after only two races they're dropping the guy that they chose to replace Checo Perez. Yeah, it doesn't look great for Lawson, but he won't really get a chance to show what he can do. I'm sure he's better than those first two races suggest.
Yeah, he is.
But he's also obviously having a lot of trouble with that car. And
well, you said it, Zog, in the last programme. You said that the reason that you thought the Racing Bulls car was a more competitive car, you might argue, than the Red Bull car at the moment is because it was less peaky, that it was manageable. But if you can extract the performance,
more forgiving, yeah.
But if you can extract the performance from the Red Bull car, it is ultimately a much quicker car. And Lawson, he only had two opportunities and a half a day or a day in testing in Bahrain to get to understand that car. But let's remember, this is Formula One, right? Great drivers, you parachute them into any car under the most arduous of circumstances, and they deliver. And those are the guys that you need in Formula One.
Or they should deliver, and, you know, to be blunt about it, you know, Lawson didn't.
Yeah.
Now, how much that's down to whether he's just not quite as good in that car? Well, he's clearly not as good in that car as the team expected him to be. Like I say, I think you probably have to lay most of the blame for that at Marco's feet, I think, because, you know, they have much more data than we do about how the different drivers perform, about the nuances of their driving style, and they know much more about the car and about the Red Bull cars, and they should be able to, you know, put the pieces together and figure out who's going to do the best job. You know, I'm expecting Tsunoda to look pretty good, because he can hardly look worse than Lawson did. I mean, you know,
true, yeah.
You know, Lawson would look pretty good if you just stuck a moustache on him and changed his name, you know, and pretended he was somebody else. I guarantee he'd look better than Lawson in races one and two. So, you know, I'm saying it's not a terribly high bar for Tsunoda to clear, to do better than Lawson has.
Well, Tsunoda, last year at Suzuka in the V-Carb, it was called that week, qualified 10th and finished 10th. He qualified one place ahead of Daniel Ricciardo, I think. I looked into it earlier on. He knows his way around Suzuka. He raced there in Super Formula, the Japanese equivalent to Formula 2, you might say. And he's won there, he's won the championship there. He's going to be brimming full of confidence. And I remember when Tsunoda made his debut for Toro Tauri, I'm going to call them now. You were genuinely impressed. I remember, Zog, you really, really buzzed about him and thought, wow, he's come out of the blocks fast. That's usually a good sign. So everything points towards Suzuka being a great place for Tsunoda to make his Red Bull debut.
Yeah, and let's hope he does get a really good result. I think it'd be great for, you know, it'd be great for him, great for the team, great for the sport. I really like him. You know, he's got a lot of charisma. I think he's a lovely fella, and you know, if he's able to be a more reliable driver for Red Bull than he has been in the past, he's shown a lot of speed, but he can be a little bit scrappy. The rough edges seem to have been, you know, more or less rounded off more recently. So I think he'll do pretty well in difficult circumstances.
Well, similarly, I think Liam Lawson will do well back at RB, Racing Bulls, V-Carb, Toro, Minardi, whatever they are. I think he'll do well there. I think he'll feel comfortable back there. And I also think he's got a huge amount to prove. And I hope that the understanding is that Liam Lawson is not a bad driver. I say it every time. I think he's a superb racer. He's got great overtaking skills. He's a proper, aggressive, steely-eyed racer. I spotted that in F2. And so it can happen that drivers come to F1 from F2 and flounder for a great number of reasons. You know, there's something about the demands of F1 which surpass F2, which is about as close as you can get. And some drivers, I'm talking about you, Stoffel Vandoorne and Jolyon Palmer, really struggle to make that leap. I've got no real explanation other than that.
Well, Lawson did a very good job in the races that he got last year. You know, he looked terrific. You know, to a fairly casual glance, you'd absolutely say he was a guy you'd want to promote to that second Red Bull seat. You know, whether there was actually, you know, enough in the detail of the data of just how he drives and just what the cars are like that might have told you that he'd struggle a bit in the Red Bull, I really don't know. But he certainly looked great last year.
Hey, who would be Max Verstappen's teammate? Do you realise that Max Verstappen has had, let me check this, he's had 3 teammates in the last 4 races.
Oh, blimey.
His previous teammates include Daniel Ricciardo, 2016 to 2018. Kind of, he broke Danny, didn't he? Pierre Gasly in Red Bull in 2019, Alex Albon alongside him in Red Bull 2019 and 2020, and he was killed by Max, you might say. Sergio Perez 2021 to 2024. However, this time last year, the Japanese Grand Prix, Max came first and Sergio came second. And then Sergio's fall was dramatic and quick. And then you can add to that Liam Lawson and now Yuki Tsunoda. Do you think Yuki's impervious to being destroyed by Max? Does he live in his own reality and so that won't bother him? He will just do what he does.
I guess we're going to find out.
Yeah.
I mean, Formula One drivers tend to be very, very confident in their own abilities. Sometimes a little too confident, you could say. I think Tsunoda will be pretty robust, but being Verstappen's teammate is, you know, about as tough a gig as there is in Formula One. Now, actually, you said that he broke Ricciardo, but, you know, but Daniel Ricciardo was absolutely one of the more competitive teammates that he's had, you know, in terms of being able to actually, you know, race with him. You know, in the end, yeah, Verstappen was absolutely the better driver, but Ricciardo gave him a better run for his money than most of his teammates.
True. He did leave to go to Renault, didn't he? And then McLaren, and then I lost track of him. He came back to Toro Rosso eventually, didn't he?
The Renault move was clearly a mistake in hindsight, but hey-ho.
Have you noticed the livery that Red Bull are going to be running this weekend at Suzuka?
I haven't. What are they doing? What's the deal?
It's a tribute to the first win that, was it Richie Ginther got in a Honda chassis in Formula One back in 60-something or other. And so they've painted the car white with red highlights.
Oh, yeah.
It looks almost identical to the RB.
That Honda was a great-looking car, actually.
Beautiful.
There's a rather nice Tamiya model of it, I think.
Ah, yeah. Yeah.
I think they do it at more than one scale.
Can't remember the number of the car. The RA332 or something like that, I think. I can't quite remember. I may have it somewhere. It's going to be hard to tell them apart, like I said, the Red Bull and the RB. Maybe that's deliberate. Maybe they're going to change their mind halfway through the race.
Well, I reckon all you have to do will be to look at which cars are in front on the road, which cars are behind, and that'll probably tell you what's going on.
Yeah, but if Liam Lawson finishes ahead of Tsunoda, right, and Lawson's in the RB, I reckon at the final pit stop, they'll swap the transponders on the car and say, no, that was the Red Bull car all along. Honestly, it's just a coincidence that
Crafty, yeah, you never know. It probably wouldn't be the sharpest thing that a team has tried at some point in Formula One history. There's a lot less of that
shenanigans,
but water cooled brakes and all that. Although NASCAR, really, I think, is where you get the most creative racecraft, could we say?
Really, I don't know about what they do there.
Well, there was one, I can't remember who it was, that made a version of their stock car that was, you know, about 1/9 scale, and you know, it looked exactly like the road car, but they just made it, you know, a little bit smaller in every dimension.
90% scale model.
Yeah, that gave them the advantage. And then there was the fuel line that was so big it held an extra gallon, so they were able to carry a bit more fuel in the car. The lead shot in the chassis rails that they dumped during the race, and they just rolled down to the inside of the oval, and no one found them. Yeah. You have to admire that kind of creative thinking.
And there's probably a reason for it, because, you know, the origins of NASCAR, they were basically crooks, weren't they? They were moonshiners. They were smuggling moonshine in the days of Prohibition. So they tend towards the illegal. I think that's wonderful. You need a bit of that. Hey, at the Chinese Grand Prix, both Ferraris were, and Pierre Gasly, were excluded from the race for different technical infringements. How can Ferrari mess up two fundamentals like that in two different ways on both cars?
Yeah, it's a pretty shocking state of affairs. They should be, I'm sure they are, you know, very, very embarrassed about that. Yeah, it's incompetent. You know, they really shouldn't have been caught out by two quite basic technical infringements there, you know, the plank wear and then Leclerc's car being underweight because of a water issue, I think it was. Yeah, no, it looks very, very bad, and they cannot afford to throw away points like that.
No, come on, we want the championship. We want it this year, at least.
Yeah, get it together for the rest of the season, guys. Come on, we want Hamilton to be fighting for the championship.
We are all tifosi now, yeah. Here's a thought. One of Max's teammates, Sergio Perez, has been making statements recently that an upcoming Formula One team are about to perhaps make him an offer. He's certainly in discussion with them. I'm talking about Cadillac, Andretti Cadillac. We don't call him Andretti anymore, but Cadillac. I would think Perez would be very attractive to a new Formula One team.
Yeah, I could absolutely see the appeal of a very experienced driver like Perez.
I do wonder whether he's, you know, just, you know, particularly by the time Cadillac actually make it to the grid, you know, whether he'll just be getting on a little bit, whether he'll be a little bit past his best, and, you know, maybe that's not the best pick. But no, but he's certainly a very experienced guy to have on the team to pair with, you know, a young, almost certainly North American driver.
Yeah. Well, he's also very appealing because he comes with 900 billion Mexican pesos worth of sponsorship from Carlos Slim, which will help any team in its early days, won't it? You know, you need a big investment.
Yeah, can't hurt. Certainly can't hurt.
Hey, other Formula One news before we wrap this up. What the heck is happening with Aston Martin? Are they selling the Formula One team or not?
Well, as I understand it, Aston Martin, the car company, is selling its stake in the team to Lawrence Stroll, who also owns a lot of Aston Martin. So, you know, I'm not sure whether there's a bit of creative accounting or something going on here, but but in a sense, you know, Lawrence Stroll is kind of selling a stake in the Formula One team back to himself.
Yeah.
Now, I think what that means is simply that it gives Lawrence Stroll more control over the team. There are fewer other parties to involve in any decisions about how to spend money, any big decisions, and having brought Adrian Newey on board, my simple takeaway is that it does say that Lawrence Stroll is very serious about driving Aston Martin, the Formula One team, on to greater success. The Aston Martin sponsorship of the team will continue, so it's still going to be Aston Martin.
It's complicated, isn't it? Because this U-Tree consortium, who have invested in Formula One, because this is how Stroll sees it. He sees it as an investment, that they're releasing money from the Formula One team, something like 56 million, I think, to bump into the car manufacturer to help them go through what's turned out to be yet another difficult sales patch for Aston Martin. What have Aston Martin got to do? You know, you'd have thought that the aligning of the road car and the James Bond aspect of Aston Martin with the sheer visibility of them in Formula One now would mean that everybody who's considering buying a Ferrari would consider buying an Aston Martin. And yet they're not selling the cars anywhere like the numbers that they hoped, proposed, or want to, or need to, in fact. I guess the question is Aston Martin ultimately doomed? Because it's had, I mean, talk about the road cars, because they've had loads of investment, but they never break even, and haven't done for 50 years.
Is their road car lineup as exciting as it could be? You know, has it maybe been a little bit too, you know, a bit stale? You know, have they not really...
Well, they have got some extraordinary things. The Valhalla, the Valkyrie, that 177 way back, and that thing that Alonso recently had an involvement in. I mean, they're pretty...
They've got some very good, you know, kind of halo... they've had some very good halo cars. But in terms of more, you know, bread and butter cars that most people are going to buy...
You're talking about the Aston Mantis Popular Plus.
But I think part of Aston's appeal is tradition. It's a tricky brand to take in a more innovative direction, I think. They're not the only manufacturer that's having trouble selling cars or having trouble selling expensive sports cars at the moment. So possibly it's more of a sector-wide problem than an Aston Martin problem.
And because their slice of the sector is a small one compared to Ferrari's slice of that sector, they haven't quite made it over the hurdle to continue financing themselves. Let's hope that they do get over the hump and hang around, because it's one of the greatest brands in the world, Aston Martin, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I'm a fan. And but I do hope that this recently announced move, I do hope it works out for the F1 team, you know, that it actually does, you know, help to continue their tricky push upwards out of the midfield. We'll see.
Well, let's hope so, because if it all does go tits up for them, I'd hate for that team to get yet another rebranding, because remember, they started as Jordan, then they became Midland, then they became Spyker, then they became Racing Pointless. Force India, Racing Pointless, and now Aston Martin. They're running out of names. Bring back Tyrrell, I say.
That'll be the day.
Zog, lovely talking to you, brother. Listen,
good to get
I shall say goodbye to you now because I know you've got stuff to go on to.
I have to head off. Yeah, yeah. Good catching up.
Yeah. Speak to you after Suzuka, man.
Catch you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Stick around because there's more from Gareth Jones on Speed after this with a new voice on the programme. At the risk of sounding like Professor Farnsworth from Futurama, good news, everybody! We've settled on a date for 20 years on Speed. Now, what is 20 years on Speed? Well, it's going to be a massive party. And also, a live recording of an episode of Gareth Jones on Speed involving you lot, the audience, and there's going to be a gig performance by at least two On Speed acts, the Pit Stop Boys and the On Speed band Mark II, with 97 detail improvements. Now, the venue that this is happening in is very limited in numbers, only 100 people. So if you want to make sure that you get a heads up, an early opportunity to buy the tickets before they go on general sale, drop me an email if you haven't already. The address is onspeed@garethjones.tv and put in the headline 20 years on Speed date alert. Okay, so you'll be given an early chance to buy the tickets before they go on general sale, because as major Sirius fans you won't want to miss out on this, and it is genuinely an exclusive event. We haven't done it for 10 years and not everyone's going to be able to get into this one. It's going to be really special, I promise you. Hey, don't miss 20 years on Speed, because Richard will be on stage, probably making stuff up, as we all will be on the night. It's going to be amazing. Email us at onspeed@garethjones.tv and don't miss out on this mega night. And here's that song. Here's the Proclaimers. Oops, no, sorry. The Reclaimers.
We want the rally back.
Got already on the bobble hat.
We want the rally back.
We do.
We do.
We do.
We want the rally back.
I already own the bobble hat.
We want the rally back.
We do, we do, we do,
we do,
we do. There was a time when forests rang with a happy sound, but today you'll hear a twinkling on the ground. It's time again for cars to jump in their attack. It's our refrain, because we want the rally back.
We want the rally back.
I already own a bobble hat.
We want the rally back.
We do, we do, we do.
We want the rally back.
I already own a bobble hat.
We want the rally back.
We do, we do, we do.
We do, we do. Come on, Wales, our cousins in the life is on. It's a turn. You've had the rally for too long. We're just like you, we're full of passion, filled with pride. And just like you, we'll keep a welcome in the hillside. We want the rally back.
I already own a bobble hat.
We want the rally back.
We do, we do, we do.
We want the rally back.
I already own a bobble hat.
We want the rally back. Let's bring it back. We love rally awards, and that's not because the last two British champs were Scots. No, I look at you. We do learn to know our Scots. For heaven's sake, he had it in the king he was. And I know we got the IRC, but let's not to batch on the WRC. So we want the rally back.
I already own a bobble hat.
We want the rally back. The rally back
and a really nice rucksack.
We want the rally back.
We do, we do, we do,
we do.
Mikko Hirvonen, Matti Ratanen,
Tommy Mackinnon,
Ali Vatanen,
Juhannanen,
Henry Toivonen,
Juha Kankanen,
Harley Toivonen,
Sima Lopanen,
Pauli Toivonen,
Lottie Lentinen,
I can't read that.
Timo Salonen,
Timo Makkonen,
Timmy Räikkönen,
Harry Lagerfeld.
We want the rally back.
I already own a nice rucksack.
We want the rally back.
We do, we do, we do.
We want the rally back.
I don't mind being cold as fuck.
We want the rally back.
We do, we do, we do.
We do, we do.
It's always nice to be told what you guys think of Gareth Jones on Speed. And a few weeks ago, I got an email from someone who said, I love Gareth Jones on Speed. You talk about Dakar, you talk about Formula One, you talk about lots of things that I'm interested in, but you don't talk enough about touring cars and World Rally Championship and stuff like that. So my response was to invite that very person on the programme to talk to us about those things. Well, perhaps WRC anyway. Will you welcome, please, to the programme, Graham King. Graham, nice to have you with us, mate. How are you?
Very nice to be here. I'm very well, thank you.
Now, we're not complete strangers, are we? We've met before.
Yeah, kind of. We briefly met at Le Mans last year when the journalists get together for a drink on the Saturday evening. And then before that, again, sort of very briefly, it was a BMW range day
at their
headquarters in about 2014.
I drove what was it called? The i3 Rex, I remember, on that day. Yes, it would have been that. I made a video for it for Gareth Jones. You were there on that.
Yes, and I had the experience, I dare say, quite a lot of people have when they meet you.
Well, they run away in fear.
we exchanged words, and for the rest of the day, I was like, I recognise that guy's voice. And I couldn't quite place it. And then I was talking to someone else who was there, and they said, oh, that's Gareth Jones. I was like, Gaztop?
Yes. I was that soldier. Well, it's a generational thing. There are only some people who know I am. Most people don't, which means I live in a nice private world. But every now and again, someone comes up to me and goes, I saw that thing he did on How To. Or I love it when people come up to me and go, I've been listening to Gareth Jones on Speed for 20 years. It's my favourite thing you've ever done. Now, that makes me happy. You work in the motor industry, don't you?
Yeah. I'm currently a staff writer at Bauer Media. I'll work on Parkers and Car Magazine online.
So are you know, in the front line of valuing secondhand cars? Is that part of your remit? What do you do?
I don't do that personally. I focus on what we call ownership content, which is matters sort of after you've bought a car.
Yeah.
So what you can do with the car, the rules and regulations, all that kind of thing. This week I've been writing the best tow cars you can currently buy, for instance.
Oh, how interesting. Right, do you know what? Before we go into talk about the WRC, let's just go down this avenue for a second. Best tow car. Well, I'm going to say it's four-wheel drive.
Yes.
It is an internal combustion engine car.
Yes, I did only include diesels in the list.
Yeah, because, okay, I was going to say it's only going to be a diesel, it won't be a petrol.
Yep.
I don't think it's going to be the Range Rover because it's too expensive. Discovery's a bit top heavy. It's a trade-off with value. Okay, it's a Hyundai Santa Fe.
No, it might have been on a previous version of the list, but you can only get a Santa Fe with a hybrid now, so yeah, that kind of counts it out.
Yeah.
I had the Defender at the top of the list.
The Defender, of course, yeah.
Yeah. Largely because, you know, it's 3.5 tons and you can get it with a package of gadgets that make various aspects of towing easier for you. So it was kind of a no-brainer, though. You know, there are other sorts of cars on the list. It's not just SUVs. I put the Golf Estate as the second choice, for instance, because you can still get that with the diesel engine.
You can't get the four-wheel drive Golf Estate, though, can you? The Synchro, can
you? Not anymore, no. Not anymore. They only do front-wheel drive.
I would imagine the... I mean, I don't know, but I'm guessing the Defender probably has some kind of software mode that you can put it in when you're towing specifically. Is that right?
Yeah, they call it the towing pack, which comes with the...
Catchy name.
Yeah. It comes with the tow bar and some piece of software that helps with, you know, some of the finer points of towing. I think it has a self-steering function for when you're reversing, that kind of thing.
Cool. Oh, cool. I need all the help I can in the world with the trailer. I'm very inexperienced with the trailer. I've done some.
Me too, but I end up writing this stuff, so.
You're now an expert.
Well.
Hey, you don't get to drive any of these cars in great detail, do you? Or are you processing other people's work?
No, I do get to drive cars on occasion. I run a long-term test car. I occasionally have other cars at home. I help out when we're doing photography as well, that kind of thing.
Cool. What's your long-termer?
I've currently got a DS4.
Oh, well, I am part of the Citroën family myself.
Well, right? Yes.
Yeah, I have a Citroën C4 Cactus first generation, because I think it's a cool one. Mm-hmm. And how's your DS4? They're pretty handy, aren't they?
Yeah, well...
Oh, that expression tells it all. Oh, my God, what's it done to you, Graham?
It doesn't do anything fundamentally wrong. There's quite a lot I do like about it. But there are some annoyances with it.
It's a Citroën. They're meant to be annoying. I know it's not a Citroën. It's a DS, but it's still a Citroën.
Yeah.
Right?
The main issue I have with it is around the powertrain. It's got Stellantis's hybrid power. They call it a hybrid. It's really a sort of mild hybrid plus, if you will. It's got a bit of pure electric driving capability, but like a couple of hundred yards at most.
Right. And that's downhill.
And I've driven that powertrain in several cars and it just never quite hangs together. It's quite rough. The way the battery cuts in and out doesn't quite make sense. It's just not terribly well resolved. The DS is the best installation of it I've used, but that is kind of damning with faint praise.
I remember driving a DS5 many, many years ago.
Mm.
That was a diesel hybrid, and it had the worst possible powertrain of any car. It was like being on elastic. Push, wait, yeah, nothing, push, wait.
Yeah.
My current Citroën isn't much better, quite frankly, but if you drive it very softly, very gingerly, you can drive around that, and it's outrageously thrifty. It's the most thrifty car I've ever owned. Anyway, you know, we're supposed to be talking about motorsport, not those, but
yes.
I enjoyed that. My God. Hey, listen, the WRC, I don't really pay a lot of attention to touring cars, international or national at the moment. I like my motorsport to be international. And I particularly like the fact at the moment that the World Rally Championship is being led by a lad who was born and bred less than 50 miles from where I'm sitting right now in North Wales. Elvin Evans.
Yes.
It's the first time he's led the championship, isn't it?
I don't know if it's the first time he's led it. He probably has before, because he has actually come runner-up 4 times in the last 5 years.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
So he probably has led the championship at various points in that run. But, yeah, I mean, we're 3 rallies into the season, and he's finished 2nd, 1st, and 1st.
Yeah.
He's leading the championship by 36 points, I think it is, at this point. So he's properly romping away with it.
What's that down to?
Hard to say at this point, really. There are a couple of factors that we do know are going on. For instance, Calle Rovanpera, who's double champion, not the reigning champion, but a double champion. He turns 25 this year and he's won 2 World Rally Championships already.
He won it in his first attempt, didn't he?
It was his first full season.
That's right, yeah, yeah. And then he stepped off because he didn't want to do a whole season. I mean, that's bold, isn't it, for a youngster?
Yeah, and you know, 2 championship seasons back to back, pretty intense. And I think he just wanted to take a step back and do other things and look after himself. As I say, he's still only in his early 20s. but he's come back for a full campaign this year. And certainly the first couple of rallies, he's been struggling with the tyres a bit. They've switched supply to Hankook this year for all the Rally One cars. And it seems, particularly in Monte Carlo, he wasn't quite getting on with them. The last round, the Safari, he seemed to be doing much better. He got within, I think it was about 7 seconds of the lead on Saturday morning.
Right.
But then a couple of punctures and broken suspension, and then the alternator packing in put him out of it in the end. And then you've always got the Sebastian Ogier factor.
He's always there, isn't he?
Sort of the World Rally Championship's bad smell, if that's not a, if that's not too harsh a way of putting it. He's always hanging around. I mean, he's only done Monte Carlo so far this year and won it. We should just dwell on that for a bit, because Ogier won Monte Carlo for the 10th time.
Wow.
I think it's Loeb comes second on that list with 8 wins.
Uh-huh.
But that 10 for Ogier on Monte Carlo is certainly the most wins on any event in the WRC history.
Oh, really? Nobody's won any other events more than 10 times? Really? Wow.
Yep, and I would put good money, really good money actually, on no one having won any major international rally, of whether it was World Championship or not, that many times. And there's probably only a very small number of people who've won any sort of rally 10 times or more. So, you know, it's an astonishing record.
What sort of shape would you say the WRC is in at the moment in terms of popularity with viewers, reach and competitors, teams and entrants now? Because things are said to be changing dramatically, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to judge from a UK perspective because it's never been as popular here since as it was during the McRae and Burns era.
Yeah.
Although you'd think the press would have picked up on the fact that the championship is being led by a Welshman, but evidently not. I think this year is kind of a transition phase because having run with the hybrid powertrain for the last 2 seasons, they've dropped it for this year, essentially because it was costing too much. It basically doubled the build cost of a car up to well over £500,000. But the thing the teams really couldn't get on with was the cost of repairing the system.
Right. Maintaining it wasn't the actual expense of it in the chassis. It was having to rebuild it after every weekend, right?
Yeah, partly that. But also it being so expensive meant they weren't able to sell cars to privateers.
Mm-hmm. Which they're going to need to do because aren't Hyundai going on holiday?
There is that rumour. Nothing's been confirmed yet, but something like that is in the ether. So, yeah, I mean, we've still got Toyota, Hyundai and Ford, who've basically been the only 3 teams since about 2018, I think.
You have to have 3 constructors to make it a world championship, don't you?
Yeah, well, we had many years when it was just Citroën and Ford, and that didn't really work at all. Although at least then, there were quite a lot of privateers to bulk out the numbers.
Yeah.
But as I say, in the current Rally One era, they just haven't got the privateers because the cars have been so expensive. Now they are supposedly price capped at about €350,000.
Right.
Whether or not that will attract privateers, we'll just have to wait and see. You know, they may be talking to new manufacturers as well, but, you know, we won't know anything until it's announced. One thing they have done with the current rules is you don't actually have to base the car on a production car because it's a standardized base frame chassis and you can put whatever body you want on it. Obviously, the manufacturers involved want a production car link. But there's, in theory, nothing stopping, you know, I don't know, Team X from Argentina or whatever, who've never built a car in their existence, coming up with their own body design to put over the chassis.
Yeah.
That's the theory, at any rate. Whether or not it'll actually attract anyone in, we'll just have to wait and see.
Wasn't there a McRae rally car? maybe 15 years ago.
Interesting. That was actually a project by Alistair McRae, the younger brother.
Yeah, I've written
it was
him.
It was called the McRae R4.
That's it.
And it was actually a sort of Dakar-type car. I think a couple of them ran on the Dakar. And indeed, there are still some knocking around. I saw one on a YouTube video not so long ago. There were plans, I think, to build a sort of more conventional stage rally car.
Yeah.
But I think the regulations changed such that it wouldn't have been obligated.
I'm applying what I know from other formulae here, WEC, Le Mans, and some single-seater stuff as well. In a time where manufacturers seem to be fleeing from a series of teams, the rules kind of soften and open up. We saw it in Formula One when they created those new franchises for Virgin and HRT and USF1 and who else didn't make it? Lotus made it, didn't they? And they introduced a standard engine, you know, the Cosworth block, which kept people in the sport. They did the same at Le Mans, where they allowed lesser hypercars, you might say, or lesser LMP1 cars fill out that grid. Do you think we could see a situation in WRC? Is there any talk about this? That, you know, there could be a more generic label, our chassis thing idea?
Well, as I say, in theory, because, as I say, you can put basically whatever body you want over the chassis, and the chassis is actually a relatively simple space frame. You know, you don't need to be any particular genius to build one. All the suspension pickups and that kind of thing are the same. And I don't believe you have to use a engine tied to a manufacturer. So, you know, there'd be nothing to stop whoever coming up with their own body design and going to, let's say, Cosworth and say, build me a 1.6-litre four-cylinder turbo engine.
That's it. That's your project before the next episode of Gareth Jones on Speed. Right, we're going to get one of those space frame chassis. Do we have to build it ourselves, or do we buy the pre-built space frame?
The three teams there are build their own, but as I say, there'd be nothing to stop you going to someone else to put one together, as I understand it.
Oh, we'll have one of M Sport's last year's models, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to brand it Gilbon, Welsh car manufacturer, right? Stick a big red dragon on the nose, make it a sports estate or a shooting brake so everybody loves it.
Yep.
And we write Gareth Jones on Speed on the side, and we'll make millions. There you go. That's sorted that out. Mate, I'm so glad you came in the program. I had no idea I was going to do that. That wasn't how I was expecting this conversation to wrap up, but we do have to wrap it up now. But I want to ask you, we've got Elastic Canarias round of the WRC coming up next weekend, this weekend?
A couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Business as usual, or is it a bit more tarmac-y there? Who's going to be good there?
It's tarmac. It's an interesting one. It's new to the championship, although a couple of drivers know it pretty well from the European championship.
Ah, right, yeah.
But it is probably a fairly typical tarmac rally, and I think it's relatively close in character to Corsica. And with Sebastian Ogier stepping back into the Toyota for that one, you've probably got to put your money on him.
Right. That's disappointing news, because I want Elvin to lead this championship after every round. It's he can't overtake him, can he?
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember off the top of my head if Elvin has won a tarmac rally.
He's
certainly eminently capable of doing so. He has, if he hasn't won one, he's certainly come very close on a few occasions. You know,
right.
Drivers can't afford to specialise these days. You've got to be able to do every surface.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for coming on the programme and being a specialist on WRC. It's great, because if I tried to have this conversation with Zog or Alex, they'd look at me and go, I've no idea what you're talking about.
Well, I wanted to hear you talk about this stuff, and you didn't appear to have anyone else to, so as you said, I stuck my hand up.
Dude, and I'm glad you did. Will you do it again?
Absolutely.
All right, I will be in touch to have you back for another episode of this programme with a new voice to the show. But for now, Graham, say farewell.
Farewell.
And I was Gareth. See you in a fortnight for another ep of On Speed. You're coming back, you are, Graham. You're coming back.
Thank you very much.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv.
We want the rally back.
I don't mind being cold as fuck.
We want the rally back.
We do, we do, we do.
We do, we do.
Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whiz Bang.
Gareth!